More dirt and Sprague.
Where are you going? And he's like, I'm going bowling. I just started laughing because I'm like, of course you're going bowling on a random Tuesday night.
Sounds like
night.
A great Tuesday night.
It's breakfast time with Dirt and Sprague.
Now, do you have your own ball?
I have two balls.
Starting your day with a big cup of dirt and a little splash of Sprague.
Your spare ball, you don't want it to hook as much, so it will go straighter. And then the strike ball, you want to be able to get some crank on that.
Heat on that.
When you hit the pocket, you get big pin action.
Well, everybody wants to hit the pocket. I mean, come on now.
Dirt and Sprague on the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number two. I think we could have done without the golf update there.
Save come on, man. You don't have 3M Open fever?
Let me check my temperature real quick.
Check
thermometer
temp.
In.
Check your temp.
No one cares!
Literally will not have over 500,000 viewers in that tournament.
I think it'll be a little bit higher than that. But there is one funny note out of the 3M. Is it Sungjae Im? I love me some Sungjae Im. He's wearing a sweatshirt today that says Sungjae Im.
Well played.
It's a Malbon sweatshirt. He's a Malbon guy. And they made him a sweatshirt that says Sungjae Im.
I'm pro Malbon.
It is hilarious if you go look at this. He's just teeing off and you're like, does that? Yeah, it says Sungjae Im. Okay.
An hour from now, we will go to Kansas City and talk with our good friend Jay Binkley. Kansas City has long been rumored as the city everybody hoists up as the, hey, your team, they're relocating the NBA. You know where they're going to go? Kansas City.
They got an arena.
They have an arena. They had a team in the early 80s. And so we'll talk with Jay Binkley just to see, like, what's the temperature for the Blazers relocating? There's also something funny I want to read that I thought was 100% spot on. I already felt that way, but somebody digging in a little bit, I mentioned in the 6 a.m. hour that I sniffed around a couple other cities, and there doesn't seem to be a big appetite, is what I would say right now, for the Portland Trail Blazers. So Dundon has leverage, but it's not like...
Maybe the city council should drive a harder bargain. Well, you've got nowhere to go, Tommy Two Nickels.
I think we should just pass
you
it.
You poor bastard.
Let's bring Tommy in. Let's negotiate. Let's say, how can you make this economy better? Because it kind of sucks, and I think we should move on with our lives by also not acknowledging and acting like he's going to take the team somewhere. Let's get to Cafe de Dirt and Sprague. We've waited long enough.
What do we got today? I'm hungry.
Great. I hope you like coffee with some pastries. We have apple fritters and maple bars today.
I'm out. Pastries for breakfast? Is that going to fill me up? I mean, I got to eat. I got like 15 of them? Pastries. Get out of here.
Have you had an apple fritter?
I have. I'm not a pastry guy in any way, shape, or form. I'm anti-pastry.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not an apple fritter guy. I'll take the maple bars.
You don't like apple fritters?
No.
Crispy edges,
no.
Little cinnamon, apple.
Nah, I'm out.
Blaze?
You can just shove some meat in there, I'd eat it.
Dude, apple fritter is the best. I'll say this, your pastry stance to me,
yeah,
is on the same exact tier as Swag refusing to eat a strawberry.
I don't refuse to eat them. I'll take a bite of one if
you
give it to me.
I know, but how are you not?
I just don't like them. I'm not a fan.
I'm a person that if you put the pastry in front of me, I have to walk away or I'll eat half the box.
Yeah, and I'm not a donut guy. I'm not a pastry guy. It's never been my cup of tea. I need something more hearty for my breakfast. That's not going to fill me up.
Have you always been this way?
Always been that way.
Like your mom or dad would get donuts on a Saturday randomly,
yes.
And you'd be like, meh.
Dude, my wife brings pastry homes constantly. She went to the grocery store and bought like 3 boxes of them. I'm like, who's going to eat all these? You know I'm not taking a bite of this.
Oh, we can't do those in our house.
Just sitting on the counter.
It's not good.
Yeah, so we didn't finish the pastries.
We got one of those raspberry lemon loaves, which is just like,
yeah,
that's as dangerous as it gets for me. Those two flavors I love.
You're gonna shove that thing
with
in
a
mouth.
Nice glaze on top. I've kept it on the counter and legitimately I opened it and just sniffed real hard and walked away. It's like if I start, I won't stop. It's a problem.
You were Ben Stiller in Dodgeball.
Yeah, a little bit, man. I'm a guy who quit smoking, but he still
right.
goes out back just so he can get the second hand.
Puts
smoke.
One in your lips or you get one of those candy ones or something. I'll just stick with the coffee for now. I'm all right.
Let's start in Major League Baseball.
And two down in the ninth for the Red Sox. Here comes Duran. And a little flare on the infield. That'll be caught by Holiday. That's the ball game. The Red Sox lose. For the first time since the 1st of July, the 15-game winning streak has come to an end here tonight. Baltimore wins this one 5-1.
There's Red Sox TV. A doubleheader is what ruins the Red Sox winning streak at 15 games. Do you know how bad Boston was? They've won 15 straight games. They are three games over 500 and still seven back in their division.
Even after winning 15 in a row.
Do you know how bad you had to have been for that to not make that big of a difference?
Oh, I'm well aware. They were right there with my team. They were two of the more disappointing teams in baseball, and all of a sudden they won 15 in a row.
That's crazy to me.
And said, see you later. Now, they still got a great – I mean, maybe a wild card is their spot. I mean, they're still a decent ways back, as you point out, in the division. 15 in a row, franchise record, right? 15 in a row?
I believe, yes.
I think that's the longest one in Red Sox history. They've been playing baseball for a long time in Boston.
Yeah.
Water up. The question is, will they be able to break down this team? Here's Velda. Velda gets behind the defense. Velda into the box, plays it across. Mora scores! Felipe Mora in the 92nd minute scores his first goal since the season opener. And we're level at Providence Park!
There is Fletcher Johnson Timbers here on Home of the Timbers. Isaac and Tukor out at the Kingston yesterday. Their first home game, home match since the World Cup, and they were hosting FC Dallas. Ended in a 2-2 draw. Kind of an exciting end. Dallas got a goal in the 87th minute. You went, oh, crap.
Ah, damn it. That one hurts.
And then in stoppage time, with 9 minutes of stoppage time, the 91st minute, Felipe Mora with a sick little crossover pass ended up getting a pretty easy goal, and they ended up tied 2-2.
Hey, man, when you're down late after giving up a goal in something in the 80th minute and then you find a way to get a draw out of it, that's not a bad outcome for you. Dallas has been better than them this year as well, in the tables, if you will. So a nice draw in that regard. And we also had a P1 earlier because you mentioned kind of a late-arriving crowd last night.
Yeah.
Yeah. They said I guess there was a ton of power outages around Providence Park last night.
3,000, over 3,000 people had power outages.
And it caused all sorts of traffic issues because lights were out, and so everybody's at a four-way stop everywhere you go, and so I'm not sure if that was the reason that folks showed up late. Also, a late night on a Wednesday. 7:30 start time for them. But a draw. Nice to have them back in Portland. First home game in a long time.
Order up!
Look, I've always had the mindset, regardless of whether I was at Troy, Tulane, or now Florida, we'll play anybody, anywhere, anytime. I don't care.
I knew it.
The people that want to whine and complain about a 9-game schedule, is it harder? Yeah, it's harder. It's what was decided well before I walked into SEC meetings, head coach. And so we got to go do it. Let's go do it. Whining and complaining about it doesn't help you. Going to work does. And so, yeah, it's going to be challenging. It's not going to be easy. But, golly, man, nothing in life that's worth anything is easy.
There's John Summerall, SEC Media Days, on an interview, asked about 8 or 9 conference games. Stop whining, shut up, and play. By the way, you see Nick Saban came out in the headlines. He's his stance is 12 games against power opponents.
Yeah, power only entire schedule. I don't know if I need to go that far, although I would not disagree with it. I think the Group of Five deserves a seat at the table, and you should play one or two of those games every year. Now, Florida plays Campbell this year, the Campbell Camels. I don't need that game. I don't need Oregon to play
Portland
State.
They're called the Campbell Camels?
I believe they're the Campbell Camels. That is week two. They play FAU and then the Campbell Camels.
Yeah,
that's who they
get.
And then obviously Florida State and their in-state rivalry at the end of the year. I don't need all 12. I'd like a 10 of the 12 at least, and then maybe two G5 teams in there just to give them the pathway and the payday that they desperately deserve. Look, this is a great quote to have at SEC Media Day for John Summerall. I get it. Don't complain. I'm blessed to be here. Florida football, SEC football. Wait until you go on a 4-game losing streak in the SEC and people want to run you out of town because you went 5-7 in year one, and then maybe you'll be begrudging the 9-game conference schedule next year. Because mark my words, if that happens, he will complain next year.
Yeah, John Summerall is somebody that I'm all in on.
I like John Summerall. I like him.
I also refuse to believe that Florida's going to keep whiffing on the coach.
At some point, you got to hit, right?
As we noted yesterday, they've only won 110 games since Urban Meyer left.
We did that a little bit with Texas after the Mac Brown thing. Like, at some point, Texas got to figure it out again, right?
And they got close a couple times.
They did. Herman had a nice year. Yeah. Charlie Strong had a nice moment. Yeah. But none of them were obviously long-lasting. And, you know, we'll see how Sark does this year. But it does seem that they're heading in the right direction.
Who was on the broadcast call when Notre Dame played Texas and Swoops's nephew scored the touchdown? You remember that? It was a primetime early season non-conference game. It went to overtime, and he was a mobile quarterback.
Yeah, Sam Ellinger, is that what we're talking about?
No. Cheryl Swoops is like nephew.
Oh.
And he dove into the end zone, scored, and the guy was like, Texas is back.
Oh, was it Tessitore?
Was it Tessitore?
I don't know.
I'm asking you guys.
I don't remember
this game. I think it was like 4, 5, 6 years ago.
I remember the Ellinger Bowl game when they won the Sugar Bowl, and I think it was Tom Herman that was the coach then, and he gave the Texas his back, hook 'em horns, and then returned for another year, and I think they all got fired the next season after that. That one I remember. I don't remember the broadcaster saying Texas is back.
Well, Tyrone Swoops.
Tyrone Swoops, okay.
The nephew of Cheryl Swoops. Nah. He was momentarily their quarterback, and I think it was Charlie Strong.
Yeah, and had a nice running touchdown.
And he dove in for a game-winning touchdown.
Look back, baby!
They proclaimed, Texas is back!
Well, wait till Florida beats like Ole Miss in week 4, and that'll be the claim on Florida. Then they got to play
Texas, Georgia, Oklahoma.
In the 3 consecutive weeks.
Are we going to get Florida is back?
The Gators are back.
I don't think so.
I show them our trophy case, and it's empty. And I think they're all very aware of that. And so, I think, listen, we live in a lot of worlds. And so we're obviously happy with the things that we accomplished. We're happy with the direction of our program. But it's also not lost on us that we haven't won the hardware that we're searching for. And so, that gets us into a mindset of growth and getting back to work to go finish this thing a little bit better than we did last year. And put ourselves in a better position maybe to compete for some trophies.
That's Mike Elko, the head coach of Texas A&M at SEC Media Day yesterday, was asked, Coach, how do you keep your team motivated? I love the beginning of that answer, by the way. If you missed it, it was show them the trophy case and it's empty.
It's such a good answer.
It's not very hard.
It is such a good answer.
It's a fantastic answer.
I love me some Mike Elko. Marcel Reed's a really interesting guy to follow this year because he kind of burst onto the scene over the last year and a half and has played really well. I think he has times struggling to throw the ball against better defenses. He has times where the passing game was maybe a C-minus, but they were good enough elsewhere, and the rest of the team was solid enough to kind of carry him through it. They had a very manageable conference schedule last year. There was no Georgia on their schedule. There was no Alabama on their schedule. And so a lot of things kind of broke their way. And now going into this year in the SEC, they're obviously one of the favorites. But you look at their last month of the season, their last 5 games, they go to Alabama, to South Carolina, who, by the way, was up, 31-3 on them at halftime last year at home, if I remember. And they came back and won that game.
I don't know how to... You're not wrong to point that out, and it was an all-time comeback. There's so much media fan noise about Beamer and, is he first coach fired stuff?
He might not even be there at the
end
of the year.
Can he overcome the noise? Not that his team listens to it much,
sure.
But, it also, there's a, I don't know, there's, an aura around that program where it feels like he's destined to underwhelm and be fired.
I don't disagree with you at all there. I'm just saying, I think it's still a tough place to play no matter who. Bama almost lost there last year. And then you close Tennessee at Oklahoma home against Texas. I mean, those last 5 games are brutal, and that's not counting a road trip to LSU early in the year. And don't forget, week 2, kind of a fun non-conference game. You get Arizona State at Texas A&M.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what ASU's going to be this year, but that's at least a formidable opponent with a good, respected head coach. So I don't know what to make of A&M. I love me some Mike Elko. I think he was a great hire. I don't know if I trust Marcel Reed throwing the ball consistently enough to get them back to where they were last year with an 11-1 season.
I think a little bit like Darnold winning the Super Bowl or Geno coming back and having some kind of a career as an NFL quarterback, in this reclamation era, we'll see what Kyler Murray is. Isn't there an element for – because I'm with you. I didn't have a ton of great evidence.
Was atrocious in that playoff game, too, against Miami.
Well, both of their offenses
were
atrocious.
Both of them were terrible.
Those were two really good defenses.
Yeah.
But, he also had NFL targets.
Yeah.
KC Concepcion's probably starting for the Cleveland Browns this year.
Yeah.
So I guess what I would say is, I didn't love it, but the idea of growth and improvement –
yeah, you got to leave the room open, no doubt.
What did we think of Jalen Hurts at Alabama? He can't throw.
Right.
Goes to Oklahoma and lights it up. Yep. So I kind of wonder how much Elko is going to get out of Marcel Reed year 2 as a starting quarterback.
It's a big question in the SEC this year because they were 11-1. They were a playoff team last year. Let's also remember in that playoff game, they had the ball inside the 10-yard line to score to tie the game against Miami.
It was a 4-down turnover,
right? He threw a pick in the end zone to end the game. They score there, you go to overtime, maybe they win that game, and who knows what the conversation is about A&M and Miami right now. That's how thin the margin was. I think the schedule's more challenging this year, and that's the thing you're going to get in these bloated conferences. You're going to have years where it benefits you, have years where it hurts you. Now, we did this with Indiana last year. Because 2 years ago, their schedule was easy, and they go 11-1. Last year, it was tougher, and they went undefeated. So they took the next step. We'll see if A&M can do that.
A&M, are they a Tennessee from 2 years ago made the playoff. Great story. Oh, look at this. They got the quarterback. Okay, right. Their quarterback's gone because he wants money.
Right.
Marcell Reed is back.
He is back, so they don't have that.
Is A&M Tennessee, or are they, do they have staying power for you?
I think they have staying power. I just don't know about this year. I think Elko is building. Remember, this was, that was only, I believe, his second year at A&M. So he's early in his tenure of getting his guys in there and recruiting all that. Mm-hmm. Marcell Reed, I believe, was a previous Jimbo Fisher guy. I think he was already on campus, if I'm not wrong. I'm going to say no playoff for A&M this year. I think they go 9-3 and just miss it. I think the schedule's challenging. They lose a couple down the stretch, and then maybe LSU or somebody random gets them.
Which of these four would you pick to make the playoff from the SEC? Texas, Texas A&M, Tennessee, or Oklahoma?
Oklahoma. So not Sark, confident.
Sark, no. Venables,
the Sark
yes.
one, I'm worried about their non-conference game again. It's the same thing as last year. If they beat Ohio State in week two, they're a lock to make the college football playoff. A lock. Mark it down, write it in Sharpie. They will not miss the college football playoff.
They lost to Florida. Are they a lock?
The whole point is that you can beat Ohio State and lose those other two games and you're in. If you lose to Ohio State, yeah. all of it is up in the air because they did that literally last year and they ended up going 9-3 and they didn't get in.
But I think when you're a program that can lose a game like that, because that talent difference, that coaching difference, It was a huge advantage Texas's way.
Oh, of course it was.
I think if you can lose that, you can find a way to trip up in other ways.
My point being, they can get away with tripping up if they beat Ohio State.
And
if they
my
lose
point
Ohio
is
State,
they could lose three games even beating Ohio State.
Yeah, that I don't see. I don't think they're going to lose three conference games. That's a big. That's that would be.
I don't
tough.
Think we know half of the teams in that conference and how good they're going
to
be.
Oh, it's all crapshoot. It's all roll the dice, obviously. But yeah, I wouldn't pick them to lose three conference games this year.
But you picking Oklahoma that group?
Of those four teams, yeah. Tennessee would be a fun story to get back into the playoff. A&M, I just worry about the back end of the schedule there for them. And I think Oklahoma has an opportunity for a marquee non-conference win on the road at Michigan early in the year, and I don't know what to make of Underwood and that Michigan offense. And if you win that game, they'll be in the top 10 and off and running.
Last one here, Cafe Day, Dirt and Sprague.
Order up!
I came in 2005, so I would have never thought Sonics would never be in Seattle. Here's the deal. Two sides, right? Two sides. One, Moda Center is the oldest, crustiest arena in the league. Two, it needs to move. The nostalgic part of it is awesome. It will always be there. Will always be, you know, the 77 Rip City Blazers. Will always be the Brandon Roy years, the Damian Lillard years. But people don't understand how business works in the NBA anymore. You cannot have a standalone arena. It needs to be part of a tiny little city so that the owners and ownership can make money. There's nothing like that in Portland. So you go to the game. Yeah. You stop and you leave, whether that's a concert, whether that's a rodeo, whether it's basketball, whatever that is, that's not good for business. So you ask a billionaire to spend 3-point-something billion on something, and then you tell him, well, you got to make that money back on basketball games? Brother, he's going to be in business till he's 100 years old. His partners aren't rolling with that. Now, on the fan side, they just want to be acknowledged and make sure that they're respected and the history is respected, because there's only three teams here, the Thorns, the Timbers, and the Blazers. So he's having to piss off the fans so that he and his partners can make their money back and do good business. We need a new arena. We need a new area. We need something to be excited about. So that's where I'm at. And he could do what he wants. He paid for it, right? But I can see them moving.
There is Portland metro area native Channing Frye, former Blazer legend, calling our arena the crustiest, oldest piece of crap. We need a district. We need a new arena. Also omitted the fire there in that answer on Yahoo Sports, which is a little disappointing. But he's not wrong in some ways, but very interesting thoughts from Channing Frye on the Moda Center and where it all sits right now, in his opinion.
You know, it is possible to build up the area around the arena and not move everything out of the city. You know, that is possible. There is some real estate development that could take place down around the Rose Quarter.
Do you have faith it's going to do that?
I don't know. But if the Albina District takes over it, and that sounds like it might happen with Phil Knight's money, then yeah, I think that could absolutely happen.
When I lived in Oregon City, there was this rumor for years by the waterfall area. They were going to demolish the old plant and build up an entire district of apartments and late-night stuff and restaurants. Like, I'd heard that as soon as I moved into Oregon City. Mm-hmm. And every year that went by, nothing happened. And it's still there. It's still an abandoned plant that looks terrible and rusted, and it's right on the water. It's a beautiful area. I'm like, I'm kind of so pessimistic sometimes that I'm like, I keep hearing about the renovations to the area, and right. I'm like, when is it? When is it starting?
Well, the part of it that I don't know if Dundon's going to pay for it. If I were him, I would want to, because then you could recoup the majority of the money, right? Like, if you open those and you lease out those businesses to restaurants and bars and all that kind of stuff, you got a good pathway to make a lot of money. But there's murmurs behind the scenes that they might just cede the land to the, what is the Albina Trust?
The Albina Vision.
The Albina Vision, that they might just, that might be a part of the agreement. If we pass the funding for the Moda Center, Albina Vision, you get the area around the arena, you got hundreds of millions of dollars, here you go. Go spend it.
There we go. Cafe Day Dirt and Spray. Looks like we checked out early there, but yeah, a lot to get to in the world of sports. Let's carry over the Blazers. A list comes out that has people hot and bothered, and dive into a little Blazer stuff coming up next. Hour two rolls on 105.1 The Fan. We're doing arm sleeve debates during the commercial break with a brand man about wearing the Iverson arm sleeve. Can I ask a really dumb question?
Fire away. By the way, people are saying that thing in OC is getting built. I don't know what you're talking about, but the people keep texting and saying it is. They're tearing it down and building it right
now. They're finally doing it?
I guess so. I don't know.
Okay, good to know.
That's what the people are saying.
Hey, we need live reporters out there.
That's what we need. Boots on the ground.
I just know when I lived there, all people talked about was how next year it's going to happen.
Here
it comes. It's going to happen. Next year it's going to happen.
This is the time. This is the moment.
Well, I know Kotek went out there a while ago, and they did a big like political, like, hey, we're doing it. But yeah. I hadn't seen progress. I go over the bridge near it all the time.
I don't go to Oregon City very often. I love Oregon City. Beautiful little town.
That 205 bridge, God, that's taking forever.
Yes, it is taking a very long time.
It's killing the traffic.
My time in Oregon City is usually spent at Stone Creek and Stone Creek only.
Fair. It's very fair.
But downtown Oregon City is beautiful. Every time I'm there, I'm like, this is cool, man.
I loved living there.
It's a great old town.
But we were talking about arm sleeves during the commercial break.
Yeah.
About what we used to wear when we were in high school.
It's got to help with the tendonitis, you know.
I mean,
it gives you some functionability.
Definitely a thing that people would say they use it for. I think older people use it genuinely because pickleball, as Dusty pointed out, or tennis.
The olds are just...
Tennis elbow's a thing.
I love that the olds are slowly turning into the youngs. Like, the olds were probably making fun of their kids when they wanted to wear stupid stuff like that when they were kids. Now they wear it while playing pickleball as if it's going to help your elbow tennis or your tennis elbow. And also the whole, like, you're glued to your phone, get off of your social media accounts. Now they're all addicted to Facebook, thinking broadcasters and athletes are dying every day because of AI slop.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah, no, I just... Yeah.
I was trying to wonder, like, because I was listening to Bill Simmons was on the Rich Paul podcast, and I didn't know if they were going to talk about Portland. They actually brought Portland up.
Oh,
he
we getting
brought
LeBron?
Portland up as a, hey, why don't Portland hire Rich Paul to run their team the way the Knicks hired Leon Rose?
Oh, there you go.
To which I thought...
Not a bad idea.
I'm mad at that idea, dude.
All those favors we've done for Clutch, maybe we'll get some Clutch deals out of this thing finally.
We're going to get Adele courtside?
Right.
I'm in.
I'm down with that.
Come
maybe
on.
Get a halftime Adele show.
But the impact of Iverson in basketball in general is
huge, dude.
Something they brought up. And then we talk about the arm sleeves today. Just like how many kids didn't do the arm sleeve thing?
It is funny to think back to the generations of every generation has their guy that kind of models the look that you want to go after.
Culturally, AI, the biggest one.
Right. Dion was that in the NFL with the robot face mask, the number 21, it became the bandana on underneath the helmet. Like, there were little things that all what you watch and you're like, God, that looks so cool. I want to look like Deion dancing, high stepping into the end zone. AI was certainly that for NBA and for a huge generation. The arm sleeve becoming a thing, it is now everybody wears one.
I would also argue braids.
Braids as well.
Absolutely. A lot of great afros in NBA history, but when Iverson came in and he started doing like the really nice, fancy braids.
Changed it up, man.
Park Rose High School, a lot of braids.
What?
A lot of braiding going on.
The one that I was never able to copy, because I definitely did wear the, I never had an official sleeve, but I did cut some long tube socks, as we all did back in the day.
I did it in pickup games. I never did it in an actual game.
Neither did I. I did not have the balls to pull that off, but playing hoops, you know, around the neighborhood, we would have the sleeve on. The one that I always wanted a copy, but I never did, primarily because I never got my ears pierced. Do you remember Barry Bonds early in his Giants days? He used to have the
long earring?
The dangled down cross earring. Oh my God, that was so cool. I always wanted that earring, just one of them, not two of them.
You wanted the dangly
but
earring.
But I never got my ears pierced, and it's a regret to this day that I contemplate at times. Maybe I'll be the 60-year-old with the dangled down earring at some point, just in the left ear, though. Just in the left ear. We all know. Gotta have the left ear. I always wanted that, man. I never did it.
So there's a list that came out yesterday I thought was interesting. Bleacher Report. Yes, Bleacher Report, still putting it out there.
They're still in existence?
They did their best 99 shooters in NBA history.
Okay. 99 problems.
I think you could guess who number one is.
Steph Curry.
And it's really not remotely close. Where do you think Dame Lillard showed up on our top 99 in NBA history?
Is it specifically three-point or just shooting in general?
Shooting.
Just shooting in general.
The best shooters of all time. Because like Larry Bird.
Is a shooter.
Is a shooter.
Yeah.
Didn't have like the three-point line the way some of these guys do now.
No, that's tough. I'll say Damian Lillard came in 12th place.
I think he's a little higher than that. I'll go 8.
If it was just three-point shooting, I would say higher than that. But just shooting in general, I'll go 12th, just outside the top 10.
12, huh?
Yeah. Because my mind goes to Steph Curry.
Okay.
Ray Allen, I think, has to be in there.
He is third.
He has to. I mean, he has to be. I would have Larry David.
That I want to see.
I would have Larry Bird ahead of Damian Lillard. I don't know if he is, but I would probably have him ahead of him.
Larry Bird is sixth.
Okay, so.
By the way, outside of Steph, I don't know if a human exists over the age of 40 that would tell you Larry Bird is the sixth greatest shooter of all time.
Really?
I think they find that offensive.
Really? Yeah.
You ever heard of the guy that used to host with Levitard, Stu Gatz?
Yeah.
He would do a thing years ago where anybody he interviewed, he'd say, shot for your life.
Who wouldn't? Yeah. Who
Larry
you
Bird
make
or
one?
Steph Curry. And anytime they said Steph, he goes, well, you died. I just think there's a segment of sports fan that is about that age, 40 and older.
You don't know what the hell you're talking
that
about.
If you don't say Larry Bird, yeah, they're like, well, you're dead.
That is criminal. He's a career 37% three-point shooter and had a number of years in a row shooting, but obviously only two or three a
game. I forget who it was. There was also a coach that said something like this, and it might have been... Might have been Doug Collins. He said, I'll see if I can find the quote if it is Doug Collins, but it was a coach that was asked who is the best, and they said, if I wanted to win a game, I choose Michael. If I wanted to save my life, I choose Larry.
Interesting. That's a great quote. That is a great quote. So, I would put him ahead of Dame. Kevin Durant, I think, has to be ahead of Dame.
Kevin Durant is number four.
Wow. So I haven't had number two yet.
You have not guessed
Reggie
two's.
Miller?
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, Reggie Miller. I'm going through my shooters.
The Caramel Cat.
Klay Thompson's probably a debatable one.
Klay Thompson, number five.
Number five. So we've got the whole top five, or do
Splash
I not have
Bros.
A three? Do I not have a three yet? Did I give you
no,
number
you got
three?
Steph, Reggie,
Ray,
KD, Klay.
Okay, so the top five's
there's
out.
Your top five.
And you said Bird was six.
Bird was six.
So there's six out of the way. So he's definitely not top six.
There's another point guard from our era. That's ahead of Dame Lillard, and he's at number seven.
From our era.
He accomplished something twice that Dame never will.
Kyrie Irving? No.
Accomplished something twice. Individually that Dame will never do.
Two MVPs. Who was a guard? No?
You're right.
Who won two MVPs? Who am I forgetting that won two MVPs?
It's wow.
Wow.
It's interesting.
And it's a guard.
Yeah, he's not an American.
He's not an SGA? No. Steve Nash?
Yeah.
Okay.
Steve Nash.
Okay.
I guess SGA technically does fit that, doesn't it?
Yeah, you kind of threw me off there.
Sorry.
I'm like,
yeah.
Okay.
Steve Nash, number seven. Yep.
Riggins, you got anything else?
Number eight, another player from our lifetime.
Okay.
Our era.
Okay.
Helped his team win a title. Took him a long time, though.
Dirk Nowitzki.
Dirk, number eight. Who's number nine? Dame Lillard.
Dame Lillard, number
Swag
nine.
Swag was close.
Close, yeah. I mean, I got no beef with that.
Well, I can't remember when it was. It might have been like June, maybe May. Fintress did this. He got into people with a Dame and where he ranks as the shooter. And there's just some people that believe Dame Lillard is the second best shooter in the NBA's history.
Well, I think it's tough because the three-point era is so I almost feel like there's a breaking point there of it's kind of like quarterback passing yards now where three-point volume, like when he's all done, where's he going to rank in all-time made threes in NBA history? Just assume he plays another 3 to 4 years. Where is he at now? He's got to be relatively high on that list for the volume that he shot. But like to the point on Larry Bird, the most three-point attempts Larry Bird ever took in his career in an individual season was 3.3 in 1990-1991. That's the highest he ever got. And how many, if you look through Lillard's era, like that's why it's just hard to compare. The game is so different.
Let's see, three-pointers.
Three-pointers made, because I know Steph broke that record, obviously, and he's number one. I'd imagine Allen and Miller and
Dame is fifth.
He's fifth all time.
He's buying Clay, Ray,
now,
and
how
James
close
Harden.
How close is he to Clay and Ray? Sounds like a radio show.
Clay, he's about 100 away.
Okay.
A little less than 100.
Okay.
And James Harden, he is... 500.
Okay. So last year, or the last year that he played, 24-25 for Milwaukee, just for context, you know how many threes he made that year? 197.
Yeah, he's almost at the 200 mark every
this
year.
This last year in Portland, he made 244.
Yeah.
So the like he's going to be a top three-point shooter in the history of the league when he retires. Now, guys might eventually catch up to him, but that just it makes it hard to compare. He's certainly one of the best three-point shooters, one of the best long-range shooters we've ever seen. But if people say he's not the second-best shooter in the history of the NBA, I don't get butthurt about that.
I also just don't agree with the opinion.
No, I don't either. I think he's one of the best.
A remarkable shooter.
Yes.
A great clutch shooter.
Yes, without a doubt.
Like, if he's shooting a game winner, I'm like, oh, my God, I feel amazing about this.
How do you compare Damian Lillard to Ray Allen?
Ray Allen's better.
I would tend to agree with you.
I think Reggie Miller is better. I think...
Again, the part with these guys...
I think Larry Legend is better.
If you put these guys in the modern era taking nine...
Ray Allen didn't even play in that era very long.
His last full season in Milwaukee, he averaged 9 three-point attempts a game. His last year in Portland, he took 11.3 a game.
Yeah.
That's a big volume.
We find out what the high of Reggie Miller was per game.
Let me pull it up during the break.
We'll go through this. The list came out yesterday. There's a couple other Blazers on it. We'll mention that.
Still top 10 shooter of all time. It's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with being a top 10 shooter all time versus saying he's the second best shooter in NBA 6.
History. 6.6 for Reggie Miller. 96-97.
So Dame almost doubled that in his last year in Portland.
Yes.
Yeah. A little bit more on this next. Dirt and Sprague, 105.1, The Fan. All right, welcome back in. We will go to KC. Are the Blazers going to leave Portland and go to Kansas City? It's always thrown out there as a destination for relocated teams. I snooped around yesterday in a couple of different markets, and I got largely like nobody around here cares or thinks about it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh. And then I reached out to our Kansas City guy, Jay Binkley, and said, hey, man, you guys seem to be like the lead city outside of Seattle, Vegas. Would you hop on? And then, you know, if he basically is like, not a chance, we can move on. We can talk about the dome renderings.
Talk about football. I think Cam's opening for them in the next day or two. I think they're getting ready to get everything going. Great barbecue food in Kansas City and a really cool World War I museum.
Also hosted the World Cup this year.
That is true. They did.
And that looked like quite a scene.
It did at Arrowhead, yeah.
So we'll talk with Jay Binkley coming up. We'll get into college football, SEC Media Day audio, and we have the Magic Hat as well. A piece of audio that I think is going to piss dirt off.
I love it.
I specifically pulled it laughing, thinking about you.
I love getting angry.
Poll question is up. Is Dame Lillard the second best shooter, greatest shooter in NBA history? Yes or no? Right now the returns are 60-40 yes.
I am shocked. Shocked. Who could have seen that coming? No, I voted no.
I also voted no.
But please don't yell at me about that. I think he's one of the best.
Why would they yell at you?
Because people are stupid. I think he's one of the best shooters in the history of the NBA. Second best? No, I'm not going to go that far.
It'd be so cool to be a top 10 shooter in NBA history.
Yes. Also, statistically speaking, he will end up being one of the top three or four shooters
in top five in most categories.
And by the time he's all said and done, it'll be near that top of the list.
Also, could put a poll question up. Game-winning shot for your life. You want Dame Lillard taking it or Larry Bird?
Ooh, Larry Bird.
Steph, Dame, Larry, rank the clutch factor.
Larry, Steph, Dame.
Steph over Dame?
I mean, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Swag, you agree with that? Steph is the greatest shooter.
He's the greatest shooter.
Steph's the greatest shooter.
But do we have a lot alive. Of like? Do we have a lot of game winners that I'm not remembering?
I mean,
on the level of Dame,
he's gotten out of the first round of the playoffs. Like,
those were pretty monumental. One snapped our streak of not getting
there
out.
Was the Olympics.
One guy hit a three to win the gold medal game in the Olympics and went night night France in France.
He night nighted them.
He night nighted France.
But Dame had
wasn't a walk off.
No. Dame had two walk-offs in the playoffs.
He blew up an organization into a championship.
I'm not trying to diminish his accomplishments.
I think you are.
But you're backing me into a corner to the point where I have to diminish his accomplishments.
You heard it there. Andy Dirk Johnson saying, Dame, you're not even close to Steph and Larry. Quote you.
No, I don't think
I'd still take Larry first.
Yeah, I would too.
Anytime a guy walks into the locker room at halftime or of All-Star weekend.
And says
who's coming in second tonight.
Dude, anytime a guy walks out onto the floor against a bad team and says, I'm going to give you 35 left-handed tonight just for kicks and giggles, like, yeah, dude, I'm taking him.
Was it a 47 against us with his
left? Eat this 47 piece with my left hand.
I'm playing the Lakers tomorrow. I'm only giving you my left tonight.
I can't got to rest my right for tomorrow.
He left his warm-up jacket on for the three-point contest.
That has to be number one.
How has nobody else tried that, right? Because they probably couldn't do it. Also, a short sleeve jacket. We have the long sleeve ones now.
Yeah.
But
no, I think he had the full button.
Yeah, but I don't think the sleeves were all the way. I think he had the short cutoff. But yeah, he had the full warm-up on. That was great. Yeah. Right, Gazaway, our good friend at K2, Georgia Bulldog, super excited about college football. He doesn't bark.
No, no barking.
How do you play for Georgia and you don't believe in the bark?
Yeah, it's kind of soft.
That's a question we're going to have to ask Wright when we get him on for football season.
I need barking out of you. I expect it.
He had this last night, heard from the city council president. Plan is to move forward with $120 million. Concern changes to county investment could affect the deal. Blazers, in his words, are non-existent at the table. When asked if he thinks Dundon wants to move the team, he said, I don't know his intention. Another one, we'll get a web story up soon. Source told me there's a reason this vote is happening August 12th. Thought is it forces the team to the table. Team source has told me it wants in writing that they won't be sued.
Yeah, and the city keeps poo-pooing this and saying, like, we have assured them many a time that we're like, that was a ridiculous claim by Novick. We're not actually going to sue you. Now, they need to leave the potential open. If you break the lease and try and move the team, you got to be able to recoup some money out of it. So that's the other weird part of this, of like how much language and how much are you really willing to put it into writing. It's nice to have some concrete dates. Like, you got a vote coming up in a couple of weeks in August. They're planning on meeting with the team. If they show up to the meeting at the end of July, I'll also add today, and I don't know what time it happens today. Maybe somebody knows off the top of their head. But if you remember, we get our county commissioner vote today from the county, Multnomah County side of things on their funding. And it seems like that push to cut it by about $30 or so million died rather swiftly, and that there doesn't seem to be a lot of concern about that vote going through and happening today. So we'll wait and see on when that one happens. I'm assuming it'll be later this afternoon or later this morning, I should say. It's still only 7:51. You get that. That's a nice step in the right direction. And then we look forward to, you said 30th is the date that they want to sit down and convene with the teams. That's a week from today. You would hopefully get them in the same room ironing out some details, but they're planning on going forward with $120 million.
Could be a nice show for you. I coincidentally, I booked a vacation before I knew dates of any of this stuff. I literally leave August 11th.
Yeah, right before the city vote.
So when you come back for the 12th is the day of the vote. That's going to be a fun show.
Yeah, it's going to be a big show. Big show that day.
I saw this from Yaron Weitzman, who wrote a book on the Lakers. So it's not just a random nobody. He wrote a book called Tanking to the Top and A Hollywood Ending, the Dreams and Drama of the LeBron Lakers. So this is somebody that's pretty plugged in the NBA.
Yeah.
And I thought this was just worth reading. He said, could Portland be on the verge of losing the Blazers? He said, I spoke with multiple NBA ownership level sources. Everyone had the same take. Dundon is bluffing and simply trying to squeeze as much of the city as he possibly can. One quote was, there's nowhere for him to go, which is why we're going to Kansas City to find out, is there a place for him to go? Another one that they mentioned is Seattle and Vegas being off the board. NBA owners want the expansion fees, expect to land in the $6 to $7 billion range. As one source put it to me, quote, even if I liked Tom a lot, I like $200 million a lot more. End quote. As for other markets, and I dug in before I had read this tweet. If you believe a place like Kansas City or Nashville is ready for an NBA team, math doesn't check out for someone who approaches ownership the way Dundon does. He'd have to pay a relocation fee, then spend to renovate or build an arena in a new city, all in a market without the built-in fan base he already has in Portland, so it's a bad business decision. Another one he had is, why is Dundon being so aggressive and antagonistic towards Portland? One source says none of this was a secret. He bought Portland and needed a new arena. It's not like he found an accounting error in the books.
Yeah, thank you, Jody.
My guess is because he knows the second the NBA moves on Seattle and Vegas, he loses all his leverage. He knows he's got a very tight window now to play this game, and I guess he's going for it. That said, one line from a third source who's dealt with plenty of owners and team sales said, quote, if the plan was to come in and bully a bunch of politicians in Portland, he clearly didn't do any research. So a lot of people around the league just think this is all just a big bluff by him, and he does have leverage, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But it's not the leverage people think it is.
Yeah, by the way, for the thanks to the listeners, the vote is at 9:30 today for the county side. So it'll be maybe we'll get word in the last 30 minutes or so of the show at the end of the Magic Hat. We'll wait and see on that. I don't know how quickly that news will trickle out. I don't like using the phrase nowhere to go. That's just a little too extreme for me, but I agree with the general sentiment of that.
Well, they didn't pass the Sacramento relocation when Seattle tried to steal
Seattle tried to do it, and we knew Silver didn't want another team moving. Like, we know that's a stance of the NBA. We know it's a stance of Adam Silver. I think we've almost, to a certain extent, become the Tampa Bay Rays of Major League Baseball, where Rob Manfred wants to expand again. He wants those checks coming in. The owners want the money, but he doesn't want to do it. Now, Vegas is settled. They're starting to build their ballpark for the A's. He's got to get the Rays thing figured out until they go full steam ahead because they don't know where the expansion cities are going to be. I think that's where the NBA's at right now. They desperately want Seattle and Vegas to join. They have billions of dollars waiting in the wings coming into their pockets, but they need to get this thing settled. And so I do think this is the way he negotiates. We saw it in the coaching search. He waited forever, got the guy he wanted, and gave him a contract we've never seen before in the history of the league. So this is the way he lowball offers people, and the hope is that he's just doing it, and then next on the 12th we'll get the vote and it'll all be approved.
Well, he has the leverage. Does he have a city? Kansas City is always a market people throw out as a relocation spot in the NBA. Jay Binkley's been hosting a radio show for years in Kansas City. They just hosted the World Cup. They obviously have the Chiefs. They have the Royals. Let's talk with Jay Binkley. Is Kansas City trying to move in and steal our team, or is it a nothing burger of leverage from Tom Dundon? Hour number three, we talk with Jay Binkley on 105.1 The Fan.